You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And as you know, whether it's during the news or throughout the day, if you've been watching television, listening to WGN, the conversation today has been completely dominated by this video that has been released, several videos that have been released showing Chicago officers firing at least 15 shots at a black Jaguar as it raced down a street. The car crashed. The driver jumped out of the car. The officers chased down a driveway between brick houses, over fences. There were more shots heard. The cops were yelling, "Get down, put your hands behind your back." And moments later, the officers were yelling at Paul O'Neill as they put him in handcuffs. He was face down, his hands behind his back. His arms appear to be limp, and his shirt is covered in blood. And as we now know, Paul O'Neill died and as a result of this pursuit. And people have a lot of thoughts on this. I was listening to Bill and Wendy. I think that as far as conversation goes, I tend to be drawn to the sorts of phone calls that Bill and Wendy get because there is a bit of a range. But there was a listener who sent a message to WGN Radio today, sent a message to the Facebook page. And you can send us messages to the station by email through our Facebook page, WGN Radio. You can text us. And this listener was concerned that there wasn't much diversity in the conversation. And I was concerned because that was somebody who could have called. And he was sharing his opinion. 2 weeks ago, we had a great conversation with listeners who responded to the idea that that talking about Black Lives Matter was making things worse, or that there aren't enough protests in certain neighborhoods. If it's happening in black neighborhoods, why aren't they protesting? And as we have talked about on this show, there are people in the communities of Englewood, of Roseland, of Austin, of Gresham, and there are people who are fighting to keep their children safe, to keep their family members safe. But why aren't we protesting, I guess, is what a lot of people ask. But that's for all violence. And I know that when people hear us talk about this, all Wendy Snyder said today in the afternoon was, this has to stop. And someone called and told her that she was implying that police officers have to stop shooting people. She only said, this has to stop. That could be so many different things depending on where you come from on the story. The need for Paul O'Neill to decide to jump in a Jaguar and steal it, that needs to stop. What was gone on in his life before that? The fact that lethal force is used, I don't know. Is it training? I mean, there's so many different aspects. And I've asked Todd Belcourt to join me in studio because you come from a family of police officers and you also live and work in a community that knows the struggles that we talk about, that we say, people say, well, why aren't they protesting, Todd? Why is it only when it's the police department related shootings?
Well, they are. They are protesting on a regular basis. We live in a culture where media generally spends time really spotlighting the issues that add to the divisions and the racial rancor that we already have in the country, rather than recognizing that these are ongoing efforts by community members of all shades, of all backgrounds, who are all fighting to make sure that everyone's lives are valued in every way, and especially those of color who disproportionately have to bear the burden of waking up every morning, wondering if they're going to see another video on Facebook that documents someone who looks like them being killed unarmed or in some position where they should not be at risk of having lethal force being used against them.
And when you say media, I agree. I think that that's in part because they're what sells, right? What sells newspapers? What conversations do my listeners want to hear? What do they want to see on the news? And it does draw you in it's the police department. And it's, you know, because it seems like the good guys. And then it does seem to paint a community as the bad guys. That's right. And then vice versa for the community that feels that they are at they're feeling victimized by the police department.
That's right. It creates an us versus them. And that's really easy to glamorize and sensationalize. And the most despicable part about it is people's lives are actually being lost as a result of the ratcheting up of coverage and people kind of going to their corners and being defensive. And now police officers are much more on guard than they should always be on guard. But now it's to the point where you're worried about acts of violence being, you know, taken against them.
Baton Rouge, Dallas.
That's right. And, you know, and for someone who does have two brothers who are police officers and a cousin, you know, I have to pray and worry and wonder every day they leave, will they come back? And they're heroes. I mean, they're doing the fight that no one else will do. And there's a hero who saved my mom's block from a drug dealer. And, you know, that one gentleman was responsible for a lot of shootings. These are people who should be honored. But the ones who are doing the wrong thing should also be called out accordingly. And that's all we're asking for. Accountability to be a universal thing, but not something that's only attributed to one community or another.
Right. And we, you know, when we say they should be protesting, or even when I say we should be protesting, I know that there are documentaries that are out there about, you know, the people in the community, whether it's religious leaders or moms or teachers. Elliot was talking the other day about how, you know, sometimes it's just a simple gesture of how are you doing? What can I do to help? And this is, the bigger this gets, I think the more we're driven away from it, the more people are like, well, I've said this for 2 years, I think there are parts of the community in Chicago that are like, just let them take care of themselves.
Right.
Let's just wall it off and they'll just kill each other. I mean, do you ever find that to be your sense of an attitude?
I definitely hear that. You know, that's really the epitome of dehumanization. When you get to the point where you're just saying, well, there's a problem, but it doesn't affect me, and I don't even associate or identify with that individual, not just because I don't look like them, but because I don't see any of myself in them,
mm-hmm.
such that you can just feel comfortable, you know, allowing that sort of rampant violence, allowing sort of disproportionate impact of the criminal justice system, poverty, food deserts, job deserts, every sense of lack of opportunity that is experienced uniquely by a particular community, for so many people to turn their backs on it, ignore it, and not feel compelled to want to do something about it. I think that's something that's why I'm in advocacy. That's why I spend time lobbying and working with different groups and building stakeholder coalitions, because that's something that has to stop. And until we get that, we'll continue to have candidates like a Trump who can capitalize on these divisions and mobilize and fundraise off of it. And that's destructive to the moral fabric of our country.
We are talking to Todd Belcour. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago Law School. And tell us also about the other project that you work on, one of your babies.
I only have one baby, thankfully. I'm the executive director of an organization called Social Change. So what we do is we help turn protests and problems into progress. So we work with organizations on the ground and individuals who are tired of what's going on in our communities to help them craft a legislative platform to create the change necessary. But most importantly, within that, we also use film as a mechanism to really inspire and motivate people to create change. So we have a film festival, an annual one, that's coming up September 23rd to 25th at Showplace Icon Theaters right there in South Loop in Chicago. And we'll be showing films from all over the world, documenting different injustices, enlightening us everywhere from Japan to India to Australia. We have hundreds of submissions that came in. We're narrowing it down to probably about 35 will be showcased. And really this came about because exactly what we're talking about now. It's really easy to be desensitized when you see, oh, there's another thing, because we see it so much. But usually film gives you an opportunity to really immerse yourself in the experience and see that travesty in the eyes of the person enduring it, and allow you to really identify with the common humanity that we should all be using as our jumping point to rally around one another. So hopefully it'll have that impact, not just this year, but every other year. But that's precisely the baby that you're referring to.
I know. So the executive director of Social Change for Justice, is it correct? Is that what it is?
It is for justice. That's not part of the legally filed name. It's the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival.
So many words, Elliot.
I know.
That's why
I said social change. We got the slang
change
version for it.
I like that. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us and join the conversation at any time. Again, I think the immediate reaction today when the videos came out, a lot of people who hadn't even seen the video were reacting, and I have not seen the video. We're going to talk a little bit more. I want to talk about the impact and the difference between this situation and Laquan McDonald. And the rapid nature in which these videos were released, and are we responding because of what happened a year and a half ago? More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago School of Law. He's also the executive director of the International
Social Change. We keep it simple. Social Change.
Social Change. I appreciate that. And I was asking you about the timing of the video, because that was a big part of the conversation last year when it was learned that Laquan McDonald had been gunned down in the fall of 2014, and the video was not released until late. Was it the summer? Or was it fall? Like almost a year?
That's right.
Over 300 days after the shooting.
Yeah.
People wondered if it was because Rahm Emanuel was running for mayor. Anita Alvarez gave a very in-depth interview this week with Sylvia Perez about the many reasons that she held on, because she was investigating that there was still information that she needed to get to the bottom of. She also said that she felt that she had been thrown under the bus by the mayor. What is your sense of the timing of the video in comparison with the Laquan McDonald, the video today coming out of Paul O'Neill's?
One of the byproducts of the Laquan McDonald tragedy was the formation of something called the Police Accountability Task Force. The mayor put together leaders from throughout the city with varying perspectives, and I was asked by one of the people who were chosen to take part. And one of the recommendations was to change precisely that. We can't have any more instances where videos are held for this significant length of time, and that was something that's changed. So it is because of Laquan McDonald that we now know what happened to Paul O'Neill in a sort of time frame where it's respectful to the general public need to know what's going on in our city. And I'm not certain that that Laquan McDonald video would have ever been released if Anita Alvarez had her druthers and the mayor had his druthers. So I'm not clear on how she could say she was thrown under the bus. I mean, generally, anyone... if I get pulled over for a DUI today, I'll be charged within a day and a half, 2 days. And that doesn't take that much time to discern whether or not there's an investigation or whatever. They look at the police report, they look at the data, and then they make a calculation on whether the person should be charged. And there isn't an instance that I can understand where it would take that long for an office to do so. And that's one of the things that Kim Fox highlighted in her office, in her administration. That would not be an issue. All people will be held accountable. She'll be protecting all citizens, all residents of Chicago and the Cook County area. And that's why she was able to get a foothold and do what's almost impossible in Chicago, which is unseat an incumbent that's supported by some of the powerhouses in Chicago.
A little bit of the machine behind Anita Alvarez. I'm going to ask you to put your headphones on because we do have a listener who has a question. And I don't have an answer for this myself. I think it's an interesting question. Hey, Trimble, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
That's very my well. Sister.
What?
Is that Hurricane Trimble on the line?
You better stop.
that's a yes. I know she wants to say, Todd, you stupid, but she don't want to say it on air.
Oh, what do you want to ask us? Because I know I don't have an answer, and maybe you know whether or not your brother does.
Okay. I have a question, actually. My question is, why is it that we don't hear much from the aldermen on the south side and the west side, but yet you hear from them when it's time to vote, where you have so many people, elderly and younger, where they can't go outside whatsoever to go get mail, let alone sit out there and have a cup of coffee or anything? They're prisoners within their own neighborhood, and there's no one there, including the church, that's out there saying, hey, other than Father... was it Father Flager, who's out there? And it's kind of worrisome because it bothers me on a daily basis.
Todd, do you have any relationship with the Alderman of Chicago?
I
know that you work with us, with state legislators.
Yeah, and I appreciate your passion there, Juan, as you described really the affliction that uniquely impacts, especially senior citizens. You know, our mom lives in a community where, you know, there's a period of time where she didn't want to leave her abode, and that's heartbreaking for any son, any loved one who's worried about the people that matter most to them. And in terms of, you know, constituencies, I would say that the community is being underserved by the people who are elected to serve them. And that's not just the alderman, that's the mayor. And I think one of the things I'm doing to assist and try to overcome that battle is working directly with the alderman, saying, hey, I've got some credentials, I can help, I can do all the work in terms of lobbying it, crafting the ordinances. I just need you to introduce it. And that's a process. That's a process because I think the mayor has his own approach of how he wants this to go. I think he wants this maybe to go after the election in terms of some of the major reforms that are necessary. And I think that's an issue. I think when we start to play timing and politics with people's lives, and you see people at every community meeting describing the worst moments that have happened to them in their entire life and having to continue to profess that, and you see that pain and you feel that pain, and to see the elected officials not respond with the urgency required, it's frustrating, and pastors are not exempt. I mean, I've worked with a coalition of pastors, and I've been trying to create a criminal justice agenda for the Black community to reform a lot of these things, and I can't tell you, I've been working on just setting up the meetings for the last 6 months. And with all the things going on around us, I mean, you think people would be calling me, not me chasing people down at their churches and going to their offices and basically crashing meetings for the Progressive Caucus and saying, what are we doing? So, you know, there's a lot that goes into this, but the bottom line is people are hurting, and it's not going to get better until more people continue to speak up and demand better of our elected officials, and I'm glad you called in to demand that one.
Yeah, Trimble, I think that's an excellent point, and I think we need to hear from those aldermen of, of those neighborhoods. They should be in City Hall demanding better for their residents, and the residents should be holding them accountable. Thank you, Trimble.
Thank you. You have a good evening, both of you.
You too. I look forward to meeting you someday.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
Goodbye.
She's a spitfire. Be careful.
Oh, look, so do I not want to meet her? Elliot, you also had a question that you wanted to join us with.
You know, you have police officers that are family members. I know I also have friends, close friends, who are police officers and family members that are public servants. So it's always been my thing that you've already talked about this, the frustration that people have over why aren't there other police officers that are speaking out. Mm-hmm. I think a big part of trust could be established if there were other police officers that would step out and say, look, this is what's going on. We don't agree with it either. And this needs to be addressed, but you just don't hear that in from your perspective with your family and what you've heard on your side. Why do you think that's the case?
I would say nothing more does more damage to credibility for any group than the unwillingness of people within that group to call out the BS of actors within that group. So, you almost caught me cussing over here. Be careful.
Oh, Craig, we'll both be ready with the.
Right.
I gotta find the button. It's been a while.
Yeah,
you got seven. All right.
No, but this is serious. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, officers, when those are people you work with, you know, they're risking their lives and putting their lives on the line. And at the end of the day, when you need to call for backup, that's the person who you may be telling on, maybe also the same person you need to come save your life. It puts an odd dynamic as a part of that equation. Certainly it's necessary for people to speak out and just to be honest about the issues within whether it be unions or police officers or a particular community. But there's significant risk. I mean, retaliation is a serious thing.
Yeah, there were two women who just recently settled with the city of Chicago because they had been trying to call attention to some of the behaviors that they witnessed that they fell victim to they worked for Vice. But we have so much to talk about. And if you have a question or comment that you would like to join us and contribute, 312-981-7200. Again, you can call or text us, 312-981-7200. If you text us, again, those are always going to be conversations that are productive and joining the conversation. And Craig can hand those over to me when those come in. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago Law School. School of Law, pardon me. Is that the more correct way of saying it?
There's no wrong way in your book.
Executive Let's Director of Social Change.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good evening,
No,
listeners.
Thank you for joining us. I was so deeply entranced in your conversation.
Yep.
There's a mic on.
Hot, humid. Angry news. Friday night.
Let me go ahead and turn that off
Well, those are all salient points. We are hot, we are humid, and a little bit angry. So that's a perfect segue.
I kind of want to keep listening. Hold on a second.
It is. You're not around.
I feel. It's okay. This is kind of fun. Hold on a second. What else has he got to say? Okay, we good? That's all right.
Remixing the news, ladies and gentlemen.
You ever had someone accidentally dial you and you try to listen to the conversation to see if they talk about you?
Yeah, right.
That's awkward. Like all of a sudden you get all FBI on them. You're like, all of a sudden you want like a listening device. You want someone to amplify it. You want to be able to isolate sounds.
Yeah.
Hold on, so let me roll you up. What was
that? Yeah, that caused a fight with my husband once.
What did he say about you?
Well, there was just a whole conversation he had with my neighbor when he didn't know I was on the phone because he had called me, and I was like, really? That's how you feel about that? Why didn't you?
Well, I think you're leaving out crucial points. Give us a little more to work with.
Yeah. No, it's totally fine. We were having a great conversation that we should get back to. But yes, I do listen in when people pocket dial me.
Yeah.
We'll put a bookmark in there.
Yeah,
we'll
let's go ahead.
We'll come back to that.
We got some time. Yeah, I think so. Maybe when the bartender from Howls and Hood gets here. Todd is an advocate for so many different, I think, portions of the population. I can't even begin to explain to people the passion that you have. The way I see you work when you're in Springfield, I know that you're traveling and you're working with a different I saw a post of yours. Let me isolate this thought. I saw a post of yours, a little bit frustrated on Facebook, you know, thinking of a, like a way forward for a community and feeling some resistance. The work that you do, what you're trying to accomplish, how often do you have to find yourself having to pick yourself up and start all over again, or at least just sort of steel yourself to the next day of, I can do this?
Interesting. Yeah, so, I mean, you just have to keep both feet on the ground and realize that, you know, there's only so much you can do in a given day, but doesn't mean you can't expect the impossible and keep fighting for it. I mean, you know, a lot of times I wish God had asked me to do something different because I'd much rather be making $250,000 at a big law firm and taking my mom on vacations and doing all the stuff that a lot of my colleagues have an opportunity to do, but that's my, I won't. My heart won't let me sleep otherwise, unless I'm doing this sort of work. So it is tough, but every time I try to do something different, even for a little bit, I can't. So it's kind of a, I don't know, a blessing and a curse, but I'm just grateful for the position to meet good people like you all and people who also care and build bridges with people who may not have been, you know, otherwise inclined to get involved with this sort of advocacy. And that's uplifting too. And then seeing community members who have helped through direct legal services or, who's been the recipient of some benefit that's been afforded via a bill that I've put forward, you know, cry and hug me and say, I've never had a lawyer fight for me. I've never had anyone, you know, speak and say the things that no one else will say and, you know, care about a community of people with records who are generally forgotten and the modern day lepers. I mean, it's a lot, but all that's to say, it's just, I'm just fortunate to be in a position to help. And I'm glad that you give me a chance to have this opportunity to talk about it.
Well, and that's what struck me, not only because you saved me from talking to a particular representative, let's call her Representative Ives, because that's her name. he saw me making a beeline for her. He's like, that's not where you want to start with your advocacy for special needs children. I'm looking at some of the texts and I'm hesitant because of what you just said as far as where your heart is and what you are driven to do and compelled to do to help people, because, you know, there's often this idea that, well, if they don't care about themselves, why should we care? And I'm making a generalization of a tone that I have heard and that I think is, you know, contributes to this problem. Yeah. When it's not just police shootings, when it is a community that is isolated, that we have institutionalized a just racism. This city is built on a grid that was designed to keep neighborhoods, keep, you know, the Polish people where they are, to keep the Irish where they are, and that was, you know, going back to the 1800s, the black migration in the city of Chicago, the portions of the city that we have, that was intentional to make sure that the black people that were coming from the South lived in that area. And we have choked those neighborhoods. Other neighborhoods have been able to go on and flourish, and those neighborhoods have not. And I don't know how we turn that around. I don't know if it's something radical. People have said something radical has to happen. That makes me nervous because
I don't think so.
But it only seems to be a word they want to use in this situation or things that are. But when you say radical,
but
something
same
else,
people won't even come to a damn. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, that works.
That works.
Okay.
Fine.
That was fine.
Right.
We approve.
Thank you. Won't even
and
come to a committee hearing meeting when you're saying, "Hey, I need the community to show up to fight for this bill." I mean, people are really excellent Facebook activists. I mean, you will never see a stronger population of people willing to voice their. But when I have a call to action saying, hey, I need you to call this legislator. I need you to put your words in and make sure they understand that this is important to you. The return on that call to action is way different. And so I voiced a little frustration. I'm sorry. I mean, that actually may be a little bit off point. But
no, that's on point. You're good. You got a lot.
Well, thanks. But I think at the end of the day, we don't necessarily need a radical change. We just need proper representation.
Right.
I mean, I think if we just demand of our elected officials what we need and vote them out, if we don't get it, we'll get more. I mean, this sort of systemic disinvestment is an intentional choice. If you show me your budget, I know your priorities. And the South and West Side of Chicago have never been a priority.
That was another thing that struck me the last day they were working on the temporary budget, where two of the representatives that stood up and very passionately, Representatives Riley and Representative Davis, who were really trying to at least get some words in and say, you are you are ignoring our communities.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going, I mean, it was clear that it wasn't going to make a difference. It's amazing to me, I was listening to Representative Franks was here on Justin Kaufman's show one night, nice, talking about what he's done. No one else has done this but me. I know, I made the same face in my office. No one else stood up and said that this budget was a bad idea. And I was like, I was in the media box. Yeah. And there were a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle, Representative Harris, Representative Riley. Right. A lot of people stood up and said this was a bad idea. And we are finding that to be the case, that it is short in so many ways. Oh, you heard Rob Martier mention that over 500, almost 500 people who work for the city of Chicago, CPS, have lost their jobs, and they can reapply because there are 1,000 openings. I don't even want to begin to understand how that system works. But
does that mean they get paid double if they get hired again?
I think so.
Since
they've
been doing a job,
sure,
to two people, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are 454 people lost their jobs, but there are 1,000 openings. How does that even, what does that mean? But I was listening to Representative Franks talking about what he did, what no one else has done this. I'm the only one that can. And those kinds of words were very strange to me because
it's very Trumpian.
It was, wasn't it? Because he's running for what
office? That's a verb now.
It's Trumpian.
Did you like that?
Yeah. Nice.
It felt fluid when
a
I said it. Let's make it a hashtag.
I don't know. We're making it. We'll make it everything.
But it seemed as though, and maybe I'm wrong in my sense, that the representatives from those neighborhoods, the most distressed areas of Chicago, that their passion pleas sort of fell flat to the, I mean, not the way they delivered them, but the reception of them was hollow.
You know, I think that's interesting. I think what this all comes down to is the importance of building, you know, a rainbow coalition. I mean, half of my family are Republicans and half are Democrats. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you don't love your neighbor, then it's easy to ignore them, right? I mean, yeah, a lot of things that we're taught when you come up, whether it be in church or just a basic teaching, are forsaken when you serve elected office. And that's odd for me to process. But I think at the end of the day, as long as we continue to have money have such a significant place in politics, then you will have people like Madigan and Ron who can make decisions for other people. And they have a disproportionate amount of power.
Yeah.
So as anyone saying, I'm the only one, I think that's unfortunate because at the end of the day, you need 60 in the House. And, that's not one vote. That's, you need 59 other colleagues.
And on the other hand, I mean, of course, Representative Franks has to fight for his constituents. But at some point, you hope that they're fighting for all, you know, as a group, the state of Illinois. Representatives Riley and Representative Davis were the only ones that were pleading with the House on the floor to please don't forget my community. And I think it was Riley who was saying it was when it came down to funding for education, it was, you know, there was a certain amount of money because they almost were going to take the bill off the floor. Yeah. Because they were fighting for something. There was a tone and actually direct. He addressed the other side of the aisle. Because they applauded when that was not going to be addressed. Representative Sandak, a bunch of guys were kind of applauding that we weren't going to stall because of this one glitch, this one moment of contention, fighting for it. Was there were phrases like we're gonna lose billions of dollars in funding for $10 million of ideals, and I thought, sometimes you have to, don't you have to? I mean, that's what everybody else in the state of Illinois has said. We have to. Well, when do we stop? When do we make things right if we're not going to do it now? And there was a Representative Sandak, who is no longer on the in the House because of other reasons. He was very upset that the representatives were kind of accusing them of being racist, like as though this bill was not going to be addressed. It was very strange. And I was uncomfortable there and in the further reasons in the Senate of how we are represented sometimes in those moments of contention. Do you get that sometimes when you're there?
You know, what I was trying to quickly get a glance at, I mean, the reason why I hold...
You're trying to text Representative Riley?
No, I wasn't. I'm like, what exactly did you say, fam? No, I was trying to find... See, the reason why I hold elected officials and police officers to a higher standard, not just because they serve, but they make an oath. You know, they're to abide the Constitution. And if we believe certain base principles, like everyone should have a right to, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, I'm not sure what part of that equation makes you think it's okay to deny people education, deny people access to needed services, deny people all the things that they should be promised by virtue of living in this country. So that's when I get so frustrated, because it's not just, you know, Joe Schmo who's just, you know, a frat kid doesn't know any better. It's you decided to dedicate your life to upholding Constitution, serving the people around you. And it's hard for me to understand the world where that means it's okay to turn your back on the most vulnerable. So that's why it's a little frustrating for me sometimes.
We are we're talking to Todd Belcour. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago School of Law and the executive director. Did I get it right?
I think it's fun that we have this game every time.
University of Chicago School of Law, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago Law School. Executive Director
University
of Social
Chicago
Change.
Law School, that's right.
Okay, more
I haven't even started yet. We've already had about five different permutations of my
You nodded the first time, and I thought I had it right, and then I committed to it. More conversation also with Elliot Serrano, our Chief Geek Officer, and Hannah Stanley, our everything lady. We work out together. We go to the movies together.
We do.
And I mean that with the audience. We do that with them.
We do that. Yes.
Thank you for posting videos. My sit-ups in the stairwell.
I didn't even ask. I just said I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's pictures on Facebook.
I was comfortable that my shorts weren't too short. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late, and I'm being judged for my selection of music tonight. I just started learning how to use this screen right here and play my own music because I kind of, but I don't know where everything is yet. It's alphabetical, but I know music, but I like music, but I don't know music. So I'm not quite sure. I know my Sharona. I know what that sounds like. So as I mentioned earlier, I felt that playing Gangs of Paradise would have been a horrible choice considering the conversation, an important conversation we were having with Todd Belcour, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago. Why are you laughing at me? Adjunct professor at the University of Chicago. Law school.
The discomfort you have every time you go through my list.
Because I'm convinced that I can remember.
Yes. No, the problem is I have too many titles.
So no, it's not. That's not a problem.
Well,
that is honorable, and you work very hard.
Oh, well, thank you.
Here, Elliot Serrano, who is the Chief Geek Officer. He is a writer for Red Eye. He also is a creator. He writes many of the dialogue for Grumpy Cat.
The Grumpy Cat comic. That's my claim to fame right now.
Mm-hmm. Best-selling.
Since we're talking...
And Hannah Stanley, by the way. I don't want to dismiss Hannah Stanley, who is also a successful radio host and has many podcasts on WGN Plus that you have to be listening to.
Yes, including one that we were referring to also, Adler University presented on social health and change, which addresses a lot of these issues from multiple different viewpoints and really was... every time we finished recording a podcast, I was like, I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. I loved that I had to drive home by myself for
not talk
and just like really kind of digest what I had just learned. And that it goes right along with what we're talking about right now.
Exactly.
Is that part of things that your husband referenced in that private conversation?
Okay, we'll get to that later.
Exactly what he talked about.
Bookmark. She prefers to drive hours by herself. I don't know how to take it.
Yeah. Yes. Elliot, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just to veer off just a tad, considering your title as an adjunct professor for the University of Chicago Law School.
There it is.
Would you have access to the University of Chicago Archaeology Department, which is where Indiana Jones studied?
I can't believe I came back to you for that question.
Yeah, then maybe you could like take me around there and I can get like a T-shirt or something. You know,
I'm happy to have that be my first official request.
Awesome.
Okay, very good. I like it.
It's worth a shot.
Do you want to know what some of the texts were earlier? I mean, like it is the conversation I heard earlier on Bill and Wendy's show from the 773. Here's how not to get shot. What do you think the rest of the thought is? Because it happens every single time we have one of these shootings.
I'm not sure if I'm the best equipped to answer that.
Don't steal a Jaguar. It may not be correct to say, but these were not people returning from choir practice or someone who helped others.
How about lying on the ground with your hands in the air, begging the police not to shoot at you while you're looking after your autistic patient and you're saying, please don't shoot, please don't shoot. They still shoot at you because why? They weren't even aiming for you. They were aiming for your autistic patient. What was that person doing that they did, that they should have done?
And the answer would be that. Yes.
I mean, one of the things that underpins our criminal justice system is the notion of proportionality. The legislator, the state, determines an appropriate penalty for particular offenses. In this case, it's not death. We don't live in a country that kills people for theft. Now, if they're advocates for that country, they should be more obvious, evident about that. But I think that's an extreme position. It's unfortunate that they're so flippant about it. They can't understand what that looks like if they protract that to the entire civilization.
Right.
That was oddly.
No,
I mean, you know,
convoluted response. I apologize.
They don't shoot executives for stealing money out of people's pension plans. So, you know, maybe
Some of these are.
Sorry, I'm going off.
No, that's right. I'm trying not to co-sign. I want to get both of us.
No, but it's to me, that's kind of like I get really frustrated when people say that. Yeah. It's a whole, well, you shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have done that. Well, and then you get this argument on the other side. Well, let's wait until everything we find out all the details and all the facts before we pass judgment. That you give the officers due process. Well, what about the person who was being arrested? Didn't they deserve due process as well?
That's right.
Will you bring up something that struck a chord with me? Because I was thinking when I heard the lawyer speaking for the family, though, that also sounded very – the language that he was using seemed to be very definitive. That and, you know, when we're talking about officers being in the line of fire, you have two brothers and a cousin who are police officers. Do you want someone having a press conference saying – using the kind of language that the lawyer was using in speaking for the family today? Did you have a chance to watch the press conference?
Yeah, I mean, as a lawyer, you are charged with being a zealous advocate.
Right.
So when you have the opportunity to basically have a trial in the public, you're forced to frame these issues as stark black and white. They're obviously guilty to anyone who has eyes, and that's the position you take. So I'm not shocked to hear that, but I do think it's unfortunate for the nuances associated with each of these individual cases, because at the end of the day, not everyone in the galaxy has, you know, been in a position where they haven't done something that may legally require that sort of force and response.
Right.
So I do try to take some time myself to read the facts and understand the circumstances before I say, well, that's unjustified, that's unjustified, that's unjustified, just because we owe it to the process. We owe it to the institution to make sure that we at least adhere to, you know, the procedures and however we're tasked with judging whether it's an appropriate amount of force used.
And I have to ask you this off the air, because there's another thing I wanted to ask you about the protesters, which is I think is a necessary part of this, you know, voicing outrage. It simply is. It's a community that's saying, again, here we go again. And I know people are going to be upset and go, oh, there's a shutdown process, though, on the other side of, oh, here we go. We're going to point the finger at the police officers. We're going to blame them. We're going to put them in danger. Police officers are already in danger. I had someone one night say that when we do Black Lives Matter, when we say that and we make that a call to action, we are making police officers afraid. They're afraid to be out there. Are your siblings afraid, or are they just concerned? Would you say afraid is a, would you ever call a police officer afraid? Because they do their job. They put on their uniforms. And they may be concerned for their safety, and it may be worse on certain days. But I wouldn't. Would you say afraid is?
Oh, I don't think that's an appropriate term to use.
It's not.
I think at the end of the day, these officers are courageous to put on the outfit every
exactly.
day, knowing the verbal and personal abuse they have to deal with, this regardless of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's when I see officers, no matter what neighborhood, I just say, hey, thank you. I appreciate what you're
yes,
doing.
And that's appropriate.
And trying to encourage the best I can in terms of being personally involved in restoring that sort of the love and trust relationship that's so necessary to make sure they can do their jobs properly.
I am right up against the news. Lisa, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I know that you wanted to make a comment. Would you mind holding on through the news? Because I've got to go to the news at midnight and be on time. Do you mind?
Sure, absolutely.
I appreciate it. We'll keep having this conversation, and we're gonna play What's in the Box. Lisa, I should let you play the game here. I know I'm being silly because it's a very important conversation, and I also know that it's Friday night, so we're kind of striking that balance. So please hold on.
No, I understand.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling too. Hold on. Here we have a quick break, and then the news. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I am joined by Todd Belcour. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago Law School. I'm going to commit to that.
We're putting too much pressure on you.
I know, it's a lot. I've got
to come off
every single time.
Be fluid.
He is also the executive director of Social Change. Just all the social change in the entire world, internationally, locally, whatever it takes, get it done, make things better. Elliot Serrano, making things better all the time as well on our show and other places. Hannah Stanley, one of our favorite people on the planet.
Oh, also making right back at you. Thank you.
Always good for a conversation. And we have Lisa, who wanted to talk a little bit more about the Paul O'Neill videos that were released. Paul O'Neill had stolen a Jaguar. Jaguar was under pursuit by the Chicago Police Department. They opened fire on the car. Once in Chicago, by the way. He stole it from a suburb. Is that correct, Todd?
Yeah.
And the videos were released. He was the video of him being shot are actually not part of the videos that were released because the body cameras on the police officers were not on. All of them or just the police officer who opened fire or...
Yeah, I think that segues to your question. What I've read is that not all of them were functioning.
Okay. Lisa, you had a comment for this conversation as well.
Yes. No, I'm just very concerned that it seems that the police officers are not entitled to the same due process that any other person accused of anything would be entitled to. In other words, prosecutors could not play videos or submit evidence out to the public for viewing in any other case. And I guess I'm concerned that in these cases, the videos are being put out into the press, into the public. And if a prosecutor were to do that, it would probably be suggested that the prosecutor were trying to taint the jury pool. So I guess I just feel a little bit that the police are not entitled to the same due process rights that everyone else that we are entitled to. And that to me is concerning. And it seems, and I've been a WGN listener for my whole life. My parents were, but I have to say it seems very much like the police officers are condemned in the press and they're convicted in the press and they really don't get any benefit of the doubt. And there's obviously been many ambushes on police, and I believe that this is creating a situation, and I'm sorry to say, I think the press is partially responsible. So I'm concerned, and how, I guess I just don't understand why evidence should be distributed in some cases because they're police officers and not in others.
Well, thank you for your question, Lisa. To answer as frankly as we can, I mean, we started off the segment talking about how I believe police to be heroes. By definition, they're doing the work in protecting people who other people may run away from or not defend. And I think everyone's entitled to due process, whether it be a person in the community or people who are wearing the badge. I think where the concern becomes something that's of urgent concern is when you have police officers who are acting with impunity. And I think as it relates to the video release, though, there is a clause that allows for the delay of the release of videos if it's something that requires more investigation or these sorts of extenuating circumstances are available where the police officer, it can affect an ongoing investigation or impact a trial that may be at stake. So I do think these precautions are there. I think from the perspective of the individual who just lost their family member, we live in a society where there's so many different ways to get news out that it's important to also acknowledge whether WGN say, hey, let's give time and wait before we have this video be made available or not. If it's being put on Facebook, if it's being put on Twitter, I mean, you have an obligation at that point as I imagine, as a media outlet to at least show it and discuss it, but also discuss it in the very framed and contained way that you're referring to it. This is what the video shows, but we're going to continue to do an investigation in terms of the facts underlying the incident and see what happened. And I think what happens when you see only some videos and not all videos, it just adds to the perception that there's something being hidden. And I think that's something we need to make sure we fight against and make sure that there's as much evidence available as possible so we can see the full picture so we don't jump to any conclusions unnecessarily or prematurely.
But what in the sense that, to Lisa's point about, we don't see videos of other people committing crimes, but we do of the police officers?
Well, I think the reason why is because we hold police to a higher standard of conduct. I think it's that simple.
But they're still entitled to the same rights under the Constitution of any other citizen. I guess that's my issue. I mean, I agree. They are held to a higher standard, and they actually are risking their lives every time they go to work. But I also feel that they're entitled to the same rights that the rest of us are. Any average citizen could not have their evidence spewed on the press. I mean, it just can't happen. There's laws against it. There's ethical standards for prosecutors against it. And I guess I just don't understand how when it comes to the police, it seems to be quite different.
Well, I should say,
because I'm not
things.
Aware of any law that allows that.
I should say two things. The evidence that's, whether it be a police report or otherwise, is public. So that can be made available immediately. But in terms of what you're saying, I agree. I do think some things can be so inflammatory that it's important to wait to at least make sure that you've done at least a baseline level of investigation before you make things public. And that's actually contemplated in the recommendation from the Police Accountability Task Force. So that is something they can evoke. They can say, hey, this is a pretty incendiary video. Let's take some time to review all this and get some more underpinning of the facts before we release it. That's something that's within the power of the city right now.
But was that done in this case?
In the vast majority of the cases, though, what we're seeing primarily, at least first, are people posting their own cell phone videos of the event, and then we're seeing the dash cam videos and the body cam videos before those are being released. But the damage has already been done in the public's eye because they've already seen the videos.
And at the end of the day, even if people are quote-unquote prosecuted in the press or in the public, very few of these officers are being convicted of anything. Mm-hmm. So as bad as it looks, I think at the end of the day, the court does hear all the facts and consider all the circumstances and make the decision they feel to be appropriate.
I think what Lisa, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, but it is frustrating to shed a light in this manner that seems so intense, and we have protests and the accusations. And if it does, in fact, at the end turn out that police officers, as you said, are not often convicted. While they are tried, and sometimes they're not even tried. Lisa, is your frustration that the initial response is to go after them in the public eye?
Yes. I mean, I think it's dangerous, and I think it's reckless, and I think it leads to, I mean, look at all of the ambushes on police that we've seen recently. I mean, it's quite dangerous, I think, to perpetuate that. I mean, there seems to be conclusory statements that, you know, and race is always stated, and I'm just not hearing the facts that a white police officer did anything because the person was black. Yet there's always the statement of the race, but I never hear the connection of, you know, that this white police officer left his wife and children and his pension and everything because he wanted to go out and hurt a young black man. Yet I feel like the press sort of perpetuates that, but the dots are not connected, and I find it. It's scary because I think it's creating a very dangerous situation out there.
Lisa,
I would say,
and I know that because of the increased nature of these videos and these instances or the level to which the press is covering them, I think that it's actually not isolated to just these police officer shootings. I think that, you know, if we picked apart like how much effect social media is having and the effects that it has, whether it's gender or race, whether it's, you know, the legislation in North Carolina, I think a lot of it is, you know, when we call attention to something, sometimes we make things worse. And I think we're still navigating these waters of what effects we are all having when we chime in, whether it's through video or social media, you know, whether it's rallies and saying we should build a wall and we should, or, you know, what difference does it make? I mean, like we talk a lot on this show about how words matter. And I think that right now it feels intensely directed towards police officers, but I think it seems to be the nature of current society that at some point a portion of the population will have the spotlight on them, and it's intense, and it can be negative, and it can cause serious ramifications.
I think also the Oh, go ahead, please, Lisa.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
I think the press has the very baseline obligation of just reporting the truth. And this is happening.
Right. I guess I'm starting to lose faith in the press because I don't think I'm seeing the truth. I'm seeing I don't know, it seems to me agenda-driven things that are being perpetuated. I mean, there's every weekend we have 60 shootings, 50 shootings, and yet I don't see any protests or anyone, you know, getting up in arms on that, other than a report of 65 people shot this weekend, and then break to the traffic.
Lisa, are you reading the Chicago Tribune? Because I guarantee you that writers like Peter Nikias and Jeremy Gorner, amongst many of the reporters, Chicago Tribune, are reporting on the violence on the South Side. And almost all of the work that they do is related to the violence that is not police related. There are a lot of journalists that are working very hard. And I guess now what's upon us is to find out who is doing the work, who is, you know, rather than consuming news, whether it's on social media. I mean, my show is not a news show. We're a conversation show. So anyone who.
Yes.
No, but I'm saying, like, so when we turn on the news. Yes. Go ahead, Todd.
I think to Lisa's point, I do put some of the onus on the press in this regard.
I was trying not to. I'm kidding.
No, I know.
I agree.
Talk trash about your employer, I get it. But I'm not saying WGN is at fault here. I'm saying at the end of the day, the fact that Lisa doesn't know that there's people who are protesting every time there's a black-on-black shooting, the fact that there's churches who are mobilizing, going to communities and praying on corners on a regular basis, and the fact that entire swaths of the population don't know that the very people who are victimized and eviscerated by this issue are the ones who are speaking out, not just when a white police officer shoots somebody, but when something happens on the block, is a problem. And I think the media could do a much better job of communicating that so we can move past that conversation and get to what are we going to do to fix it.
And I agree, because I was actually a prosecutor and I prosecuted, and my primary areas that I prosecuted for were areas that had black victims. So I would say in my 20 years, I spent the majority of my life devoted to victims of crime who were black. And I did that wholeheartedly because I took an oath to do it, and I truly believed that there are people being held hostage in some of these communities. So I am actually aware, but because of that awareness, I guess I'm a little bit more sensitive, because I feel that the press is not sensitive to the fact that there really are good police officers and good prosecutors who literally are taking time away from their families and their lives to try to help other communities, and yet we're constantly vilified in the press. And I find that to be very sad, and I think it's creating a very dangerous situation.
And I think your perspective is one that needs to be lifted up some, Lisa. I think we need more people who are not of color, who are willing to speak out and say, I say Black Lives Matter because I fought on behalf of people who are victimized, who are African American. And I'm tired
Absolutely.
Of seeing a people of a particular community deal disproportionately with victimization and being abused. And I'm going to speak out and demand more of my mayor and of aldermen. If we can have more people like you who care about blue lives, black lives, all lives to speak out, I'm not sure if we'd have to have protests any longer. We'd have a more representative General Assembly and a more representative city council that's willing to fight for all people.
Well, I just hope that it is black lives, blue lives, every life. I just want to hear every life, because lately I saw a lot of police officers throughout my 20 years, and I have to tell you, I saw police officers who really cared, and I saw them really go out on the line and literally risk their lives for people they did not know. And I understand there are bad, there's good in every profession, but I'm very troubled in the perpetuation of this all police are bad. And when I hear this, it's just troubling. I understand there are issues in every aspect. We've got a lot of issues here, but how many times,
I mean, would it take, at least, I mean, you know, on this show, we have said many times that we know that 99%, I mean, I don't even know what the number is, but how much respect we have. I know that every show has said it. I know that maybe sometimes our tone of voice doesn't. Are you saying it's coming from like the news outlets? Because when you say that all cops are bad, that's more opinion than it is news or press.
Yeah, right? It's there's a lot of, I think the written press in the Sun Times and the Tribune are very anti-police. WGN is very, I mean, like I said, I've been listening my whole life. My parents listened. You guys are obviously, you're pro-police to a certain extent, but yet everyone seems to draw their conclusions when they see a video. And as a prosecutor, it shocks me, because for every case, there has to be evidence, and it just astounds me that I guess we don't need, you know, detectives who go through training and schooling and prosecutors who go through schooling. It just seems that, you know, you see a video and it's like, well, here you go. Nobody understands anything about.
Well, what were your thoughts after seeing the Paul O'Neill video?
I did not watch the Paul O'Neill video. I listened to the audio. I've heard of the content. It sounds like, from what I heard on WGN anyway, this afternoon, they were talking about police officers saying he was shooting at us, right? He was shooting at us, right? It sounds to me like there was a lot of chaos and the officers didn't know because the guy's fleeing and nobody really understands what's going on. I, for one, wouldn't want to be in that situation. I could never do that job. I mean, I don't think many of us could, yet we're all willing to sit in the comfort of our, you know, living rooms to say, well, the police officer should have done this. I mean, I don't know if I hear gunfire. I don't know. It sounded to me like there was confusion as to who was firing the shots. Yet this afternoon on WGN, it was suggested, and I think it was callers calling in, and that the police officers were making self-serving statements, which I just couldn't believe it.
Right. No, Lisa, I think you make excellent points that we have to get to the bottom of it, and there's so much more that has to be investigated. Lisa, thank you so much for holding on the line and engaging in our conversation,
sure.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN.